Take back the city for yourself tonight. I'll take back the city for me. Take back the city for yourself tonight. Whoa, whoa. God knows you put your life into its hands, and it's both cradled you and crushed. But now it's time to make your own demands. Whoa, whoa.
Welcome to Third Paradigm, an out-of-the-box think tank about community sovereignty and regenerative economics. We look at how to take back our cities, farmland, and water, our money, production, and trade, our media, education, and culture, our religion, and even our God. We present a people's history of the Bible and a parent's view on how to raise giving kids in a taking world. I'm your host, Teresa Caraggio, broadcasting through Radio Free Brighton, Free Radio Santa Cruz, Upstart Radio Online, and through the Unwelcome Guest Collective. Multimedia transcripts to all shows are available on the website at thirdparadigm.org. Welcome to the 63rd episode of Third Paradigm, entitled Money as Theft, or Why We Need a Glocal Economy. Glocal has been coined to mean local in a global context. It recognizes that it's not possible to fix one without the other, or even to understand why we're in so much trouble. Many buy local and local currency movements are saying, in effect, now that exploitation isn't working so well, let's take care of ourselves. Even if that were ethical, we could never get up to speed in time. With fewer than 2% of U.S. citizens producing real goods and food, we're reliant on international goodwill. This is a scary concept given how we're treating the rest of the world. On my recent trip to D.C., I attended the Green Festival. Two of the speakers I was especially interested in were Pablo Solon, Bolivia's ambassador to the U.N., and Claudia Salerno, Venezuela's presidential envoy on climate justice. You might remember her. She became famous for pounding her fist on the table in Copenhagen and declaring that the U.S. had hijacked the proceedings with the equivalent of a coup. At the Green Festival, she gave an equally passionate, if less percussive, talk. After it, I waited to speak with her while she was thronged by interviewers from Pacifica Radio and Latin American TV. Finally, I pressed my way to within a foot of her, and she turned. I told her my hope that Venezuela and the Alba nations come to the rescue of Honduras. She nodded sympathetically. I then said that U.S. hegemony was a problem that was solving itself. As the petrodollar stops being the exclusive currency of the oil bourse, in other words, the only type of money in which oil can be bought, nations will start flushing dollars out of their central banks, creating a market awash in dollars. The value of what the dollar buys abroad will plummet, leading to hyperinflation. Agribusiness, which sells to the highest bidder, will ship our own crops, probably still subsidized by our tax dollars, into emerging markets. The ensuing food crisis will be far worse for us than it was for Cuba during the hunger years. As one mother to another, I said, I want to ask a favor. When the tables are turned, I hope that Venezuela will remember that the United States people and the United States government are not the same. We have no control over our government. We thought we did when we elected Obama, but you see how that's turned out. By the time we're willing to consider the kinds of things that could turn it around, it will be too late. Claudia looked at me, opened her arms, and hugged me. Not a wimpy American hug, but un abrazo, a hard hug that means it and goes on longer than is polite. In Quechua, they sign their letters, to the best of my pronunciation, Marquacuki Wakwicha, a strong hug for you, sister and brother. It was this kind of hug, of solidarity, mother to mother. I walked away, floating on air. Claudia knew that I wasn't exaggerating. From Venezuela, they can see the writing on the wall, even if we can't. In this episode, we're going to decipher some of that writing and see if we can understand what's happening before it's too late. First, we'll start by reviewing what money is. With this in mind, we'll list the features that a successful economic turnaround would need to have. For this exercise, my economics group imagined that we had the freedom to set up any system we wanted for Santa Cruz County. What would the criterion be by which we determine whether it was working? We'll explain how the strategies would be opposite for a situation of so-called normal inflation and a circumstance of hyperinflation. But first, let's hear some poems. These are Each of Us Has a Name by Zelda, For the Sleepwalkers by Edward Hirsch, and Everything is Going to Be All Right by Derek Mahone. The music is Welcome Ghost from Explosions in the Sky. This first poem is dedicated to the people of Haiti. Each of us has a name. Each of us has a name given by God and given by our parents. Each of us has a name given by our stature and our smile and given by what we wear. Each of us has a name given by the mountains and given by our walls. Each of us has a name given by the stars and given by our neighbors. Each of us has a name given by our sins and given by our longing. Each of us has a name given by our enemies and given by our love. Each of us has a name given by our celebrations and given by our work. Each of us has a name given by the seasons and given by our blindness. Each of us has a name given by the sea and given by our death. By Zelda, translated by Marsha Lee Falk in Beloved on the Earth. For the Sleepwalkers. Tonight, I want to say something wonderful for the sleepwalkers who have so much faith in their legs. So much faith in the invisible arrow carved into the carpet, the worn path that leads to the stairs instead of the window, the gaping doorway instead of the seamless mirror. I love the way that sleepwalkers are willing to step out of their bodies into the night, to raise their arms and welcome the darkness, palming the blank spaces, touching everything. Always they return home safely, like blind men who know it is morning by feeling shadows. And always they wake up as themselves again. That's why I want to say something astonishing like, our hearts are leaving our bodies. Our hearts are thirsty black handkerchiefs, flying through the trees at night, soaking up the darkest beams of moonlight, the music of owls, the motion of wind-torn branches. And now our hearts are thick black fists flying back into the glove of our chest. We have to learn to trust our hearts like that. We have to learn the desperate faith of sleepwalkers who rise out of their calm beds and walk through the skin of another life. We have to drink the stupefying cup of darkness and wake up to ourselves, nourished and surprised. By Edward Hirsch. Everything is going to be all right. How should I not be glad to contemplate the clouds clearing beyond the dormer window and a high tide reflected on the ceiling? There will be dying, there will be dying, but there is no need to go into that. The poems flow from the hand unbidden, and the hidden source is the watchful heart. The sun rises in spite of everything, and the far cities are beautiful and bright. I lie here in a riot of sunlight, watching the daybreak and the clouds flying. Everything is going to be all right. By Derek Mahone. That was Each of Us Has a Name by Zelda, For the Sleepwalkers by Edward Hirsch, and Everything is Going to Be All Right by Derek Mahone. The music was Explosions in the Sky with Welcome Ghost from their All of the Sudden I Miss Everyone CD. With the sleepwalker poem, we posted a photo of a boy floating on a pea pod from the opening ceremony of the 2010 Asian Games. Check it out at thirdparadigm.org. As we head into this economic time where all bets are off, we all need the desperate faith of sleepwalkers who rise out of their calm beds and walk through the skin of a new life. We also need the reassurance that everything is going to be all right in the long term, because the short term is looking pretty rocky. We're talking about economics and the features that a successful system would need to have. Most people see a fair economic system as one that leads to a more equitable distribution of money, or of goods and services. But we'll begin by asking what money is, as we did in the second show of Third Paradigm, called Doubting the Existence of Money. Wikipedia defines money as an object used as a medium of exchange, but it then clarifies that the vast majority of money isn't an object at all. It's an idea, an intangible concept. One might say a figment of the imagination or the construct of a dream. Exactly, my gift economy friends say. That's why we should freely distribute the goods and services without the use of money. I agree with them when it comes to services, because our time is ours to give. It's the one thing we own completely. But do we own the goods our money buys? Each product is the sum of labor and resources. If the Earth's resources can't be monopolized, but only borrowed by the person who uses them, who really owns the product? Of course, it's the person whose labor made it. If money symbolizes an exchange of labor, what does our labor do for the person who made the goods we buy? Our labor serves the people who pay us, people who have more money than we do. Our labor, in other words, enriches the rich. If you're a teacher, you're working for the government to justify taxes. If you're a doctor, you're working for the insurance companies to justify premiums. Even if we look at the students and the patients we help, they're not the ones making the shoes or shirts our money buys. We're a services labor force, but man cannot live by services alone, nor a woman. And so even though our money's created by debt, it's actually backed by theft. If our money didn't buy cheap products made under a standard of living we'd never tolerate, we couldn't live. We're getting these products at a steal because they are stolen through theft of the resources, sovereignty, and human rights of foreigners and immigrants. This theft-backed currency is what sells us on the debt and the taxes. If we were growing food and making the things that we traded with our neighbor, would we tolerate 90% of the value of the trade going to a distant and unresponsive government? Would we give 1/3 of our hard-earned cash to the banks in mortgage payments? I don't think so. On the other hand, we pay an arm and a leg for things that should be free, or almost free. Housing, daycare, healthcare, education, and retirement. These are all things that families and communities used to do for each other, things that were a point of honor to provide. But these stretch us so thin, there's very little left for the people who provide our food and goods. According to the Department of Labor, the average family spends only 7% of their budget on food at home, although they spend almost that much on food out. Since the actual laborer gets little of the money paid at the store, the value of their time is minimal. I looked at a book called Fast Food, Slow Food, The Cultural Economy of the Global Food System, by Richard R. Wilk. One of the studies looked at the Yapese people, who are subsistence farmers and fishermen. The family averaged about 20 hours a week spent producing food. That would equal half of a U.S. family's budget if the farmer's time was valued the same as ours. Of course, the food we eat is much more labor-intensive than the Yapese diet of taro root and fish. If we were producing all of our own food or trading for it, it would take the majority of our time, not 7%. With none of our labor benefiting the farm worker and less than 7% of our income, we're like birds stealing the bread out from under the little red hen's nose. Remember that children's story? We're the ones saying, "Not I," to planting, picking, threshing, and grinding the wheat. But still we think our money entitles us to take it away from the worker when it's time to eat it. Before we look at the features that an economic plan would need to have in order to change this, let's listen to a John Hiatt song for the journey called Before I Go.
I've been sleeping to travel on the ground or in the sky. All my schemes have come unraveled. All that's left is you and I. And I will try, but I will stumble. Showing signs, shipping with truth, they're lighting fires all down the line. And I will try, and I will stumble, but I
was John Hiatt with Before I Go from his Crossing Muddy Waters CD. You're listening to Third Paradigm, and we're talking about what the criterion would be by which you'd measure a plan to turn around the economy. Our society gauges success from a consumer perspective, the ability of people to buy products and services. But we've questioned whether that was enough or even a step in the right direction. My global economics class saw any society that was 98% dependent on other people for their food as unsustainable, especially when there was nothing we produced in return. Without reciprocity or self-sufficiency, our lifestyles teeter on the edge of a crumbling dollar. And so these are the features we listed as important to a functional plan. Number one, foster production by raising the cost of food and goods while lowering the cost of housing and services. Number two, allow local government to be self-funding. Move towards no debt and beneficial alternatives to property and income tax. Three, permit free trade among neighbors, but tax those imports that are environmentally or socially destructive and not just to our own society. Differentiate between small-scale or homestead production and corporations. Number four, recognizing that our standard of living is very labor-intensive, create safe harbors for hard-working immigrants. Five, establish incentives for sharing, caregiving, job creation, and generosity. Reduce the risk of liability for doing good stuff. Number six, implement the change gradually but irrevocably. Invite people to opt in rather than forcing them. 7. Decentralize control and increase transparency and individual empowerment. Number 8. Cure NIMBY syndrome, which stands for not in my backyard. Don't allow products in that are made in ways we wouldn't allow here. If that eliminates 90%, examine whether our laws are too strict. Number 9. Enable useful roles for all people in society at all stages of life. And 10, establish a community reputation for being a good global citizen, which will be worth more than gold in the coming cataclysm. Once we wrote the features that an economic plan should have, it was time to develop the plan to develop the plan. Someone once told me that in order to cope with all the depressing details of how economics works, people first need a vision. they have to be able to picture a way that it could be. Well, if hope is the thing with wings, a vision is the thing with feet. It needs to be solidly grounded in reality and be able to get from here to there step by step. But while we held to the laws of physics, i.e., everyone can't consume without anyone producing, we didn't get bogged down with the non-starter that they'll never let us do this. Our assumption was that when things get bad enough, people will start to consider things they wouldn't now. Our shared certainty was that they will get bad enough. What's next after the stock bubble, the housing bubble, double-digit unemployment, and 40% tuition hikes? The mother of all sharks in the water is hyperinflation. This is where the value of the dollar plummets. Besides the U.S.-backed petrodollar no longer being the reserve currency required to buy oil, we've just diluted our money by $600 billion that we handed to the bankers, and the U.S. strong-arm tactics to get China to devalue the renminbi are backfiring. David Baer in Peru just sent me the most concise and clear-thinking article I've read on this topic. It's by Michael Hudson and is called Krugman, China, and the Role of Finance. You can link to it from our website at thirdparadigm.org. This is an extremely important article for understanding our economic situation, and we'll discuss it more in a future episode. In a situation of hyperinflation, the cost of debt and services would deflate, along with our incomes and bank accounts. But the cost of food and goods would skyrocket. One of the key features of our economic plan is to cause this to happen gradually, rather than the jolt we're facing now. How do you protect yourself in a situation of hyperinflation? The strategy is not only different from a situation of inflation, but is its opposite in every way. For inflation, you need to put money at risk in the stock market or in real estate speculation, so it keeps the same value relative to what it buys. But for hyperinflation, you need to invest where you'll get a return in real goods, not money. Things like local food production. For inflation, you're in competition to make more than your neighbors, because the rising tide of inflation will sink your boat if it's anchored to a fixed marker. But for hyperinflation, investing in community will be more important than money in keeping you afloat. Do you really want to be the only one with a lifeboat when the Titanic sinks? In closing, Black Friday has just ushered in the season of mourning for those of us who care about the people who work in the Chinese, Indonesian, and Mexican forced labor camps known as sweatshops. Perhaps with a dropping dollar, the era of cheap junk is ending, through no fault of our own. But in the meantime, you can support ethical buying for the holidays. Fair Trade USA has 12 days of the Ultimate Fair Trade Holiday Gift Guide, featuring our friends at Fair Trade Sports. But Fairtrade Sports has gone one better, linking to the holiday guide at Shop to Stop Slavery. A website called Free to Work has an iPhone app you can download to check out the labor practices of brand names while you're shopping. And local surf activist Kyle Tierman has come out with a video called Buy Local, Surf Global, which features Annie Leonard and the Sri Lankan factories that make a lot of our apparel. However, it also features Pacific Wave, the local store that sponsors Kyle. I happened to go into Pacific Wave because my daughter had blown out a flip-flop. We're fortunate to live where you can buy flip-flops out of season. I asked the sales clerk about Kyle's video and whether that meant that they were sourcing their products ethically. To paraphrase, her response was, "Are you kidding? Look around. It's wall-to-wall multinationals." But they do get their t-shirts made by American Apparel, supporting the oversexed Dove Charney. Perhaps the one simple thing you can do to help people and the environment isn't quite as simple as Kyle thinks. For Third Paradigm, this has been Teresa Caraggio. Thanks to Mike Sirocco for web editing and to Robin Upton and Ken Doust for help with sound production. We go out with a song by Iron and Wine, which is the stage name for Samuel Beam. Sam has 5 daughters, so he's 2 up on me. However, I now have 3 teenage girls in the house all at the same time. As one house of girls to another, I wish him luck. This is Freedom Hangs Like Heaven from his Woman King CD. Thanks for listening.
Mary, carry your babe, bound up tight like lips around the wimple. Your fingers over my face, blind eyed Samson, driven to the temple and night. Birds dig until dawn, freedom hangs like heaven over everyone.